Board Gaming with Education, a podcast for anyone curious about how games and education mix. We explore various topics like game-based learning, gamification, and board games, and the impacts they have on learning. Here's your host, Dustin Statz.
Welcome to Board Gaming with Education. This is an extra episode, so we have some extra content for you. Normally, we do like a top five or what we've been playing recently, and today it's going to be a discussion or talk about the board game Dune, because we had an awesome opportunity to play this game last weekend. So before we get started, Jay and Spencer, can you introduce yourselves?
Sitting across from me, as always, is the ever handsome Spencer. Spencer runs Uchacha, which is Taipei, Taiwan's first Western vegetarian restaurant. Uchacha currently has two locations. You can find Spencer hiding in the basement, which is a board game cafe.
His new logo, or his new saying, is saving the world one board game at a time. Uchacha.
Is that? And across from me is Jay. He runs the website Cardboard East, reviewing games, especially local games. He is also the hated Atreides and will be targeted in the next game.
We're getting into Dune talk here for someone not familiar with the game like me. So this is going to be maybe a little educational for me because I don't know much about Dune. So Jay, I did enjoy the game. So before Jay takes over, I want to just say that it's a fun game. So if you've never read Dune, I would at least suggest trying the game.
Let's go into the geography a little bit.
Well, back in August 1st, 1965 is when the book Dune was first published. It, I think, tied for the Hugo Award. It won tons of awards, and it's basically, people have called it the Tolkien of science fiction.
And who's the author?
It's Frank Herbert.
It is the science fiction novel.
Yes. I think it's the greatest science fiction novel.
I would agree.
Ever written. Anyway, there's a huge cult following. People love the book. It's won tons of Hugo Awards. In 1979, the board game company, now defunct, Avalon Hill, published the board game Dune. I don't want to say it received a lot of awards, but it did get played quite a bit. And it, over the years, over the 40 years, it received a cult status because, well, it hasn't been renewed. And that's because the company, one, is defunct, and two, like, the Herbert estate do not let that license go. I can't really blame them because the 70s and 80s is responsible for a lot of terrible IP games and movies and TV shows. So, and it's hit the news recently because this year the Dune game will be finally re-released for the first time in 40 years.
Does it have anything to do with the new movie being shot?
It most likely does. It has everything to do with the new movie that is currently being filmed and will be released in 2020, in the November, I believe.
Is it that soon?
Yeah, it's that soon.
Ooh, it's going to be good. It gives me chills.
Sandworms on IMAX. Mm. So it hasn't been released in 40 years. And through that time, it's received lots of print-and-play versions. There were Scott Efforts made redesigned the game for a modern look. And there was also a Russian designer, Ilya, his name is Bolorarsky. I probably said that wrong. I know I'm 100% sure I said that wrong. But he created this nice Art Deco look to it, and it looks absolutely gorgeous.
Which one do you have?
I have the Russian one.
Oh, it is beautiful.
Well, thank you. The and thank you, Ilya. we'll mention him later on. However, over the course of 40 years, game design has changed tremendously in that 40 years, and people have tackled the rules, sharpened them up, and it's also created many, many, many house rules. So I do not envy the company Gale Force 9, who will be reprinting the game, because they're going to be contending with everyone's house rules of how to play the game. There is a saying in the community that no one has played the same game of Dune twice. Everyone plays Dune
awesome.
Differently.
We've played it twice, and we played it differently both times. So.
Yes, and we'll talk about that as well. But Dune had been my favorite book for a long time. And then when I found out there was a game of it, I got really excited. And then when I found out, oh, it's out of print, I got kind of depressed. And then I realized, oh, there's a print and play version of it. And then I went and spent quite a bit of cash to create my own copy of the game. But I'm really happy with it. It looks really good. It looks better than most of the games that I own. And recently, I invited Dustin and Spencer to play, and we're here to talk about their experiences with Dune. So what did you guys think?
Well, first of all, it was love at first sight.
I know Spencer's ready to jump in. So I'll let Spencer go first.
I mean, the game was amazing. You could see that a lot of other games were inspired by it. I immediately was thinking of the Game of Thrones game, actually, because both concepts, Dune and Game of Thrones, are very based around intrigue, backstabbing, political machinations. And you could see a lot of that going into it. And there are aspects of the Dune game that I can see also making it a different house rule every time, not playing it the same. It's almost like a feature. I know it's not intended to, but it's awesome. I mean, you could make so many little tweaks that game and try it out, and it would not take away from the joy of playing it.
Yeah, I think I really like the idea of the negotiation in the game and the alliances. I think that it could make the game go a lot longer too. So it was a long game. So if you are gonna, or if you're interested in wanting to play, be ready to play for at least 2 hours. I mean, both of our games took 3 to 4.
Yeah,
it's definitely a destination game, a game that you have to set aside time for.
But it's not like Risk, where you've got this long winding down of, you know, trying to take advantage but then getting screwed by the dice. It's not like Monopoly, where it's like you're just waiting for them to land on the brown property so you fleece them out of the last of their cash. It is a journey going through the whole phase. I mean, so can we jump into the gameplay?
Well, let's talk about like how the game works, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. There are lots of videos on there, so I won't go into too much detail about how the game works, but essentially it's 6 different factions, and it's an asymmetrical game. It's one of the earliest asymmetrical game designs out there. If you are a fan of board games, you probably have heard of the game Cosmic Encounter. Cosmic Encounter came out 3 years before the board game did, and it's by the same designers. So they took what they learned about asymmetrical play and brought that into Dune. In the game of Dune, everyone's playing one of the major factions from the book. Everyone plays differently, but everyone has the same win condition, more or less.
And they are tailored beautifully to each sect.
And there's only one resource in the game, and that's the spice. The game deals with combat, and it's brutal.
Yeah,
it's not a game where you have lots of guys on the map and you're fighting all the time. It's all about precision. I want to fight this battle. I want to win this battle. And I'm putting my resources and my efforts into this one battle. And if you lose, you lose everything.
Oh, yeah. Even because in a lot of ways, like Risk, you're looking for an advantage and when to press it. But you very quickly learn not to overstep. Like, beginning of our game, Dustin made, I thought actually it was a really smart move. He beelined it towards one of the sieges, which is one of the 5 things you need to hold to win the game. Actually, you need to only hold 3 if you're by yourself. And he took all his people, because he has the advantage of numbers, and plopped it over there. But then he tried to take all 3. And the thing is, very early on in the game, everybody has the resources to really stomp on you for doing that. And that is what happened. And then the same thing happened to me a few turns later. I was playing the Bene Gesserit, which are very resource scarce at times. And I tried to, I thought, ooh, I have a window of opportunity here. Press the advantage, and realized very quickly I too also overstepped, did it a little too early, and I got stomped.
Yeah, I like how you were talking about earlier the phases of the game. Like, very early on, you're kind of building your army, and then everyone has a strong kind of army, and then everybody's down to, like, nothing. And then you're kind of rebuilding a little bit, but you can never get back to, like, where you were when you were at your strongest. But it's really cool because We even had a player that felt like he was out of the game. And he had to wait a turn or two, but he was right back in it with everyone else because everyone overextended and they lost their armies and they were back down to, you know, just a couple guys on the map, on the planet.
The map, by the way, is, I think, one of my favorite maps of any game. I love how it works, how you are, instead of crossing a map from the west to the east, you are usually crossing across the pole, or you're landing on it as if you are actually in space. I mean, it really does feel like a game like Twilight Struggle, where you feel like you're actually playing the Cold War. In Dune, you actually feel like you are participating in this struggle for Arrakis.
Yeah, the map is really gorgeous. In fact, the map is so well done for the Russian Art Deco design that for the reprint, they're using that art.
Oh, they are? Yes. Oh, that is a great idea.
For those of you that don't know, Spencer, his favorite part about games are maps. So if it has a good map, he's sold.
Oh, it is an amazing map. And then they have a mechanic. So in Dune, there are these desert storms, kind of based on Mars, except on steroids, where they just wipe everything out. So there's the idea that they've got this sweeping thing going around the globe. And since it's a circular game, they basically have these dotted pie slices. And the desert wind, you got to always be wary of where it is. And in the two times we've played, I've just so happened to be in control of the family atomics. And you can blow up things on the map in order to wipe people out. And it is just having that power, you know, is the most satisfying thing.
I remember the first game you guys played, one player had a special card called Weather Control, where he could control how far the storm went. And everyone calculated that the storm can only move up to 6. So if I have my army here in the middle of the desert, they'll be safe, and they can collect spice, and I can get income. But he played the card and made the storm move 10 and wiped out, I think, 4 or 5 armies on the board. Amazing.
Yeah, I think with board games, as a designer today, there are so many board games out there that you're not going to be able to come up with this really clever new mechanic, but maybe, from what I understand, I've never professionally published a game, but from what I've understood through podcasts and listening to other designers, you're really trying to create that experience in the game. And I think Dune creates many of those experiences.
Oh, it takes the most important part, basically the political machinations, and incorporates it into each faction in a different way, to where you really, if you're playing the game correctly, should be suspicious of every player, but for a different reason. So Atreides, for example, there's a bidding phase where everyone bids for cards that they use as tools, like the weather control device, but you also can have weapons that help you in combat, or like the family atomics, where you're blowing up a ridge and making two cities that would otherwise be vulnerable. But the Atreides player gets to look at those. So everyone's kind of basing their bids on how that player is reacting to the card they see. And then Harkonnen, they just have a number of
treachery cards
and traitors that you always have to be careful of going to battle with them. And then I'm not going to explain all of them, but my favorite one is the Bene Gesserit one. They have a card at the very beginning of the game. Actually, it's not a card, it's a mechanic, where they choose who they think will win and on what round. So anytime during the game, you must always be mindful of what the Bene Gesserit are doing.
I forgot that.
I mean, you do it 3 hours in. I mean, it's a hard thing to keep track of, but whenever you want to ally with somebody or whenever you want to press to win, if you see the Bene Gesserit's legs shaking over there, you know, on the 6th, 7th, 8th round, and you look like you're going to win, and the Bene Gesserit player's not putting up any resistance, there's probably a reason for that, because at the end of the game, you'd be like, I win. And the Bene Gesserit player goes, actually, no, you didn't.
Yeah, this happened in our last game where I, as the Atreides player, allied with the Bene Gesserit, and I won in the 7th round, and then I lost because I was just part of a prophecy.
So basically, Spencer played Jay like a fiddle.
Yes.
Well, but
it was amazing.
And
though.
That is
really good.
That is another beauty of the game. It is so amazing. Jay and I, we won together. We won the game. Except there is an actual built-in mechanic of the game where it's like, actually, no, you didn't. I mean, I still won, but you didn't. And it's just an extra knife in the back, man.
It's, I think the reason why Dune has lasted for 40 years is because it's unlike any other game I've played out there. You have a bidding mechanic, but you don't get to see what you're bidding on, right? There are you have fighting in the game, but then people actually die. You really can't get them back.
Yeah, all of them die. I mean, everybody's dying in that game. It's amazing. You win, they die.
And there are ending win conditions. It's a game that it's really difficult to win by yourself. And you're more likely to win with an alliance of two or three people.
But even then, you got to be careful there because there is a third win scenario where you can betray your allied player.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. I haven't played a game like that.
So this is all the game from 79, right?
Yeah, it's all the game from 1979.
So what do you think is going to change or with the new game? Because the new game is supposed to come out when?
This year in the winter, I believe. It's there's a mechanic in the game where it's called a Karama card, and there's only two cards in the deck. And when you have this Karama card, you can play it and highlight or unlock one of your special abilities that you can use. So a good example would be the Atreides. When we fight, I can see part of your battle plan. But if I use my Karama card, I can see the entire battle plan before I design mine. And there are lots of other various ones as well. But it's probably the most confusing part of the game because everyone's Karama card... The Karama cards are just one card. It just says Karama on it. But everyone's Karama ability is different. And then, not only that, you can also use the Karama cards to cancel other factions' special
like
ability.
An interrupt or be an infinity bid.
Yeah.
I think that one's awesome.
There are lots of different ways to use it, and that's probably the most convoluted part of the game. And I think they'll probably try to streamline that, hopefully.
So, are we going to play the old game again?
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely. We have a game on the 20th.
Yeah. Any and every time we can play, I'm up for it.
I think this time, when we've played the last few times, we played different ways. The first time we played, we had one spice blow, and there's one phase of the game where spice appears on the map. And the original rules, it only appears in one area on the map every round.
And spice is currency, right?
Yeah, it's the only resource in the whole game.
What you need.
And then the second time that we played, we had a double spice blow, or half one. So basically on odd number rounds, spice appeared in one area. And on even number rounds, spice appeared in two areas, but it was halved in value. Lots of people play different ways. What did you guys think about the difference of that?
Well, we had talked about this earlier, and unless Dustin's changed his mind, we had decided we liked the double spice blow on even rounds better, and you had decided you didn't like that for a very particular reason.
Well, why do you like it more?
I like that it divides up some of the battles, which, not to put words in your mouth, you seem to not like.
Well, we've had this conversation before the podcast, but people listening haven't heard this conversation.
So I should have this conversation as if we've never had it before.
Exactly.
Okay, let's do that again.
All right, I asked my question. So which did you like more, Spencer?
I liked the double spice blow because it would divide up when you can go and get the spice. Because especially as the Bene Gesserit player, and I imagine the Fremen and Harkonnen player could have the same... Maybe not the Harkonnen player. Let's say the Fremen and the Bene Gesserit player. Oftentimes, the Fremen player can't be everywhere. They could be, but not necessarily. The Bene Gesserit especially are pretty soldier sparse. You're not going to ever overwhelm people. You're going around killing people, right? And I'm talking about killing heroes. So having an opportunity to go out and get spice just doesn't really come up. So you're biding your time. So it adds I felt like I was able to do more things with the Double Spice Bowl there. And it wasn't so much that it was giving me an unfair advantage. It was more giving me another thing to do. It's not why I won.
Dustin, what did you think?
I think that what is unique about the game that we talked about are the house rules, that you can change it and you can experiment. And the one thing that, yes, it may give an advantage or it may not, you can bring that up to debate, but what it doesn't do is doesn't break the game. And I think it, for the most part, I mean, maybe it does, but I guess if a lot of people have played with these various house rules, they're tried and tested, and they seem to be at least fair enough.
That's a fair answer. Dustin, the politician of board gaming.
I mean, like I said, with the Bene Gesserit, they're the ones who probably gain the most. Well, Fremen also, because Fremen can be very resource scarce.
I didn't like it because I think it weakens the Fremen, and the Fremen is stronger when everyone is spice poor, because the Fremen should be able to get anywhere. According to the setup and how the setup is, the Fremen should be able to. There are 15 places on the map where spice can appear. And on the round one, the Fremen are able to access 14 out of 15 places. So no matter where the spice is, they should be able to appear there and get there on time before anyone else.
Everybody else can appear.
Can I make a proposition on the show?
Hmm.
So I don't want to get too far into in-depth strategy because think a lot of listeners have or haven't played. But I think it would be cool if we did a video strategy video, maybe about Dune and different strategies that you can play in the game.
Oh, that sounds great.
Because that would be cool to have before the game comes out, the new one. And then we can talk about the different mechanics they added and maybe what that has to do with the new strategy.
That sounds good.
You guys would be up for it?
I'd be up for that.
That
sounds fun. I would just say that I think, Dustin, to extend on what you said about house rules, is one of my favorite things about Dune. I went through a long phase of playing it with various house rules and house rules and house rules, and I eventually kind of distilled it back into the original rule set because I found that to be easier, a little bit simpler, and not too convoluted, and I found that it worked best. And now when I play, I kind of keep it very simple. There's only really two or three house rules that I play with, and that's because that's just the way I prefer.
So do we have anything else to add about the game in a general sense, as far as maybe someone's going into
the combat? The combat mechanic is amazing, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, it's a bit of rock, paper, scissors, but incorporating the different faction special powers, you are doing very different things with every faction. It really does feel different. You're afraid to go up against the Atreides because they can see half your battle plan, and at some point he gets a big bonus. You're afraid to face a Bene Gesserit because they can pretty much guarantee they're going to kill your hero unless you've got a special card to retract.
You're
them.
Afraid to lose against the Harkonnen because they can capture. If you lose, they can not only kill the hero that you used, but can kidnap one of the heroes that you didn't use that battle.
And cancel the voice.
What I love most about Dune is that it tells stories better than other games. There are lots of moments that I remember of Dune, and I don't remember who won or who lost, but I remember these moments that are funny to me that happened and that have stayed with me. So probably out of the top 20 board gaming moments in my life, I would say a good chunk of that is our Dune memories.
I think you'll remember the time Spencer won at the end. It's gonna be hard to forget. I'll keep reminding you.
Oh, that was beautiful and painful all at the same time.
Well, I really hope we get six players for the next meet. I'd really like to see the guild in action.
Yeah, I think that's good. Thing to say is advice to players that are maybe thinking about playing, and we have discussed that you need at least five, and maybe I think six would be
I mean, you could do. I think you could do four.
Yeah, four seems doable.
I think with it's four or five or six, but obviously six is by far the best.
Can you not play with? Are there set factions for not playing for fifth and sixth?
In fact, it's when the game was designed, they only anticipated people to play with three or four or five people. They didn't expect people to be as strict as they are today and only play with six or five.
Hmm. But why? So we haven't played with the guild each time because is that a specific rule? Or is that house rule?
That's just me.
Oh, okay.
All right. So thank you guys again for this talk about Dune, and hopefully we'll get together to record a strategy video about Dune. I mean, I'm not an expert. Jay may be an expert. Spencer is learning very quickly, so we'll see how great of a strategy video it would be. But before we go, where can our listeners find you guys?
You can find me at cardboardeast.com, where I review and create content for Asian board games, all in English. I am at the website on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And you can find me in my hole at Uchacha. I'm surrounded by board games. I've got a Switch, so I may be distracted when you come downstairs, but I promise I won't ignore you.
Saving the world one board game at a time.
Yeah.
Uchacha. All right, thank you guys.
Thank you for listening in this week. If you like what you heard, be sure to let us know. You can find us on social media as Board Gaming with Education or BGE Games, or email us at podcast@boardgamingwitheducation.com. If you want to support our podcast, be sure to check out our support page on our website. As always, teach better, learn more, and most importantly, play more. Thank you for listening, and until next time.